You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 104 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. And we are joined this week by a special guest, third Pelton brother. Welcome back to the pod, the one and only Chris Smith.
It's really great to be back. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Well, especially since I seen a H2 Hummer in Bellevue yesterday that was all decked out in Seahawks Super Bowl 48 that, celebration. Nice. Yeah, with autographs on the side of it.
I thought you were going to say it was decked out in Pelton Cast.
That's weird because I didn't.
Well, that's my goal for the future.
It's weird because I didn't know I had driven in Bellevue yesterday.
Love that idea.
Isn't that me?
I was so like, me. Wow, that guy's really committed to the Super Bowl champion Seahawks. And then I drove by him and I was like, there's autographs on the side of it.
There is, I'm sure you've seen it, in the greater Boulevard Park area, a converted cop car that is now painted, I believe also Super Bowl 48.
Oh, yeah. It's not as good as this Hummer is, but I think I see that cop car like every other day.
It's very recognizable. You know when you see it.
This has like the big like 12 on the front.
Yep. All right, but this is not a podcast on Seahawks theme cars. We got a lot to get to, so let's start with this week's beer, which was also last week's beer, but we didn't get to it. The second one.
So again, it is the Silver City Brewery Ripe and Juicy Double IPA. Have we figured out where Silver City is?
Yes, because Chris.
I know exactly where it is. The original one, Silverdale, it's very near the Kitsap Mall that is in Silverdale, and it's about maybe like 4 miles from Paulsbo.
Okay.
Where I attended one half of school year for high school.
Suffice it to say, it is not anywhere near the Columbia River in the border with Oregon, which was not me not knowing where Silverdale is.
No, I was
which brewery it was we were talking about.
I was cringing when I was listening to that. But.
Yes, it is the case for most of the listener throughout the podcast.
There's a lot of cringing that happens when people listen to this podcast.
I've been off the beer.
Oh, is this okay?
Last, I'm going for it because.
This is a special occasion.
Yeah.
All right, well, first
and
off, I hope
nobody I know will hear this, so I can lie and tell them I still have not had a beer.
So first off, I hope no one was cringing as they listened to our NFL draft preview with Zach Whitman, which you should check out before this week's NFL draft begins on Thursday with the first round, which the Seahawks will trade out of, inevitably.
I was telling the kid at work, I was like, the draft starts on Thursday, but... I'm sure the Seahawks won't be making a pick on Thursday, so...
They may be late in the round on Thursday. It is possible. But also, a toast as we begin to the Seattle Seawolves for winning their inaugural game, 39-23, over the San Diego Legion. I have no idea
what... Is that the rugby team?
Yeah, I have no idea whether that's a high or low scoring game.
Cheers to the... Wait, yeah. Seawolves? It's
solid.
Well, good for them.
Solid.
I haven't... tasted any beer since the Super Bowl.
What does it taste like? Since Super Bowl 48.
It tastes really good because last I had a Rainier.
Okay. So this is a pretty steep drop off.
Mm. All right. Well, a main reason we brought Chris today, besides to fact check us on the location of Silverdale, was
I'm trying to get some more Tai Totem steaks in also. I've been trying to work those in lately.
I'm trying to counter that I talked about my Rainier too much when Brittany McPhee signed with the Storm. This week we had a change of plans. We previously were planning to go to El Camion for our burrito/tacos review. We're unable to get there. Instead, we decided to go to the most convenient location that I don't think was officially on our list, but we knew we were always going to do. And that is, of course, Taco Time Northwest. And so, Chris, would you tell us a little bit?
Before that,
which?
I want to introduce, we could not have this conversation about Taco Time without having you here, right? Chris, you have multiple occasions. Wait, you have an intro?
Please tell us your Taco Time Northwest credentials.
There we go. That's good. No, that's good.
That's what I was laughing about before the pod.
Well, once upon a time, as a 16-year-old mohawked wannabe punk rocker, horrible skateboarder, my mom told me I needed to get a job if I wanted to drive a car. So I went to the South Center Mall in Tukwila, Washington, and I applied for a job at Taco Time. Yes.
Not at the time.
South Center Mall, home of the Seawolves.
No, Tukwila. Tukwila legitimately is. That's not a joke.
So my first job ever was at Taco Time at the South Center Mall. I worked at that location for exactly 5 years.
Wow. Where we would regularly come after Taco Time closed to get some leftovers from you.
You could get a nice crisp burrito that's been hanging out for like a half hour.
Still fresh. Still
maybe
fresh.
Some fries.
Okay, but then you left Taco Time and returned.
Yes. I actually worked at Taco Time once again a couple of years ago. I believe it was 2014 until 2015. So 6 years of my life spent working at Taco Time.
A significant portion of your adult life has been spent working at Taco Time. So you're saying that in high school, Taco Time saved your life.
The cliche is that people, when they work at a fast food restaurant, they realize the seedy underbelly of everything that's going on and grow to hate it. And quite the opposite, I think, has happened in your case.
Yeah, when I left Taco Time in 2006 as a 21-year-old young man, I missed it very much, the food. So I've probably been going back to Taco Time at least once a week since then.
Nice.
And you would think, you would hear from other kids back then, like they worked at like Wendy's or McDonald's, and it's like, oh, I can't eat that. Like, Taco Time? Yeah. Like, you're going to come back. It doesn't even matter.
And you've been there. You've been behind the scenes. You've had your hands in the food. Even you understand like, where it comes from.
Even when I worked there as a kid, there would be people that come and they would be like, oh, I used to work at Taco Time. They're like, oh, I can't get enough of it.
It's like a fraternity.
Yes. Except you all hate each other.
Well, there could be some fraternities probably too. So, the thing
I hear the fraternities are hating other people now.
The thing about Taco Time that we should briefly get into for the listener who is not in the greater Western Washington area is that there are, in fact, two Taco Times.
Mm. This is a big thing for me.
Shared corporate origins, shared many, many menu items, including the trademark crisp burrito, which we'll get into in a second. But different ownership for the locations that are in Western Washington as opposed to those that are in Eastern Washington, Oregon, are there Idaho? Is there, I don't know. I don't know about the non-Northwest.
I think Idaho and even in Canada.
Okay. So
is the other one.
The one in Western Washington, which we patronize, is Taco Time Northwest.
Yes.
That's a key distinction here.
The real Taco Time.
Which is weird because the other one is, I think, actually the like strict I was going to say forerunner, but that would be the opposite. Successor, like the lineage of the original Taco Time, I think is the other one, right? That sounds right.
You know, I'm not going to say either here or there on that one, on the other Taco Time, because I don't like to big them up at all. I know the Taco Time Northwest one started in White Center, is the first one, and my grandmother has told me on multiple occasions when they first opened up, my grandfather insisted that they go and check it out.
Started in White Center, headquartered in Renton, Washington. Could there be any better fast food restaurant?
It's a perfect natural alliance with the Pelton cast. And I think one of the great things about
Taco Time... If only they served right here. They should really start exploring that.
Concept location. Besides the great food, Taco Time Northwest, also just a brand I think you can get behind. Like the fact that they've reduced the amount of things that are not compostable that they serve to two things on their menu.
Well, they were way ahead of the curve on compostable. Before City of Seattle, they just made all of their locations, everything they had was compostable pretty much except for a few things. And now it's even less than that that aren't compostable.
All right, one quick question. Yes. Is Taco Time fast food?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's an important thing of trying to get that food out. It's supposed to be fast food. Sometimes, depending where you're at or what's going on at the certain location, you might be having to wait a minute. But
from a quality standpoint, I would say it falls more under the fast casual categorization.
Fast food doesn't have to be bad, though. It's just good fast food. I have a statement about this in a second.
Okay.
At the end. But fast food doesn't... Is Chick-fil-A fast food? Because of course Chick-fil-A is fast food.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good food.
Well, I'm saying that other than Taco Bell, with whom Taco Time shares some small similarities.
The word taco.
One word, yeah. Yep. Taco.
Like, other restaurants that serve the food that Taco Time serves are not fast food restaurants.
Other fast food restaurants are bad doesn't mean that Taco Time is not fast food.
You're not listening to my point. Like, you can go to Taco Time and get more or less the same thing you're going to get at Chipotle or whatever the other burrito chains are. And yet those are fast casual because they don't have a drive-thru window. That's basically the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different, I think.
And they have a drive-thru window. But you're getting pre-made burritos and tacos or whatever at Taco Time. At Chipotle, you walk through the line and tell them exactly what you want.
Well, no, there's not... The only thing that is pre-made would be like
you're not customizing each individual item that you're ordering.
But you can, and they will never tell you... You can't have people order the weirdest thing. There's a guy who used to come through the drive-thru or the fish taco, but the fish soft taco, and then he would have us put it in the tortilla warmer, like a Taco Bell Crunchwrap Supreme, like how you.
Huh.
Interesting. That's worth considering.
Does it make the tortilla? I want to hear more about this. Does it make it crunchy?
Yes.
How crunchy are we talking? So
if
I were to order a chicken soft taco, I could ask them to put it in like the warmer or whatever, and it would be a crispier tortilla?
Yes.
Huh.
That's intriguing.
You will be an annoying person, but they will do it for you. Even having worked there, I would never, I don't even ask them to do certain things that I would do if I was making it for myself, just because...
Wow, that is even better than the golden rule. All right, the other issue of categorization with Taco Time.
Okay.
Here's the thing. The crisp burrito, it really isn't a burrito.
Why is it not a burrito?
It's just a giant taquito.
Yeah, but what is a taquito?
A taquito is a mini burrito.
A taquito is...
I mean, yes, but the term exists.
Or in the technical term of its actual name, a mini taco, but it's not really a taco.
Yeah. It's a rolled taco, which is a burrito. The only difference is that it's open on the end.
So that's the other important thing here, is that they serve the natural soft taco, and I believe also just the plain soft taco. They're wrapped. They're not open. They're just a burrito. Why are they called tacos?
Why are you so concerned with this?
It's, if you want...
Why are people so concerned with whether a hot dog is a sandwich? Categories matter.
All right.
Taco Time is great for what it is, and you can't really... waste time trying to figure out.
That's fair.
Because, I mean, a soft taco is really more like a burrito.
Yes.
Anyway, so, they're all burritos. And there's, two things that are tacos there.
Right. The important thing is that they are all delicious.
There are many things that we don't understand about Taco Time. But we've come to appreciate those things as uniquely Taco Time.
Exactly.
In the way...
that tater tots have become Mexi fries.
No, they're different.
Well, they're made specifically for Taco Time by the...
They're tater tots.
That company.
Chris has personally seasoned those Mexi fries.
You know, the difference is the seasoning.
Okay. All right. Fine.
That changes everything.
It's a proprietary seasoning from Taco Time.
Seven herbs and spices.
I couldn't even tell you.
Ever been to the other Taco Time?
I don't think so.
They have one in actually Las Vegas.
Really?
I saw it when I was driving into Las Vegas. I saw it on the sign, and I was like, "Oh, I gotta do it," and I didn't because.
So no.
My sister, one of my sisters, actually worked at one of the other Taco Times in Idaho.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. A family divided.
Yeah. She'll be like, oh, no, this thing's is better. And I'm like, no.
It's funny that none of us have ever been there because there is no restaurant that I hate more than the other Taco Time.
I mean, I don't hate
it. I really can't stand it, and I've never had it.
There it is.
I just pity it.
Well, because people be able to come in the drive-thru with some coupon for the other one, and like sometimes they would like to be so popular that they would have to post like in the thing, hey, even though this is the other Taco Time, we're accepting it. Wow. because
they're great people at Taco
it's
Time.
It's so Northwest. Annoying, then they won't go away.
So what is you as a person who has eaten Taco Time once a week for the last, I don't even know how many years, 15 years.
Yeah, 15, more than that. Damn.
What is your typical order at Taco Time? I want to hear your typical order if you're ordering and if you're making it yourself.
Okay, so it's changed a lot over a long time. Like back in the day, it would just be straight up chicken soft taco, which like I held like way up there. It's like chicken soft taco, that's the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, make that a meal, and then you throw a crisp burrito on the side.
Nice.
Either beef or chicken. Crisp bean burrito is beneath me. I think it belongs at the other Taco Time.
Oh, wow. Wow, strong words. Strong words.
But now they have a, you know, when I went back to work there a couple of years ago, they have the chicken Caesar soft taco, which I had never tried until I went back and I tried it and I was like, oh man,
that was my go-to for a while.
That's most of the, I'd say 70% of the time that's what I'm going for.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
Chicken. I've definitely had it. It didn't strike me as the chicken soft taco, or I have started getting the beef soft taco. It's really hard.
Yeah,
to compete
with. I went to beef. Like when I worked there as a teenager, for some reason I just didn't like the beef. So it was just chicken soft taco.
Well, I used to hate crisp burritos growing up. I remember we'd get them occasionally.
Really?
Hated crisp burritos until I discovered the chicken crisp burrito, which is excellent. And that's what I had today. I had a beef soft taco.
I'll tell you why.
Why? Why is that?
Because the chicken crisp burritos are hand rolled.
Ah.
Huh.
The beef and bean come in a box from a...
Really?
From a taquito vendor.
From a meat vendor, yeah.
It's a giant truck that says taquitos really big on the side.
I bought some
taquitos. And larger taquitos.
Oversized taquitos.
So ridiculous.
Do you have anything else to say on that?
But that was my order today. It was the crisp chicken burrito and the beef soft taco.
So I went with the chicken natural soft taco. I think the only difference is that it's like a wheat wrap instead of wheat
and tortilla. It also has beans on it.
Is that different from the non-natural
regular
soft
taco is either beans, beef, or chicken.
Okay.
The natural is those options, but it has beans on it as well.
This is why Chris needed to be here.
Yeah. It really broke this down for me. So the crisp beef burrito was for me the OG. For most of my life, my go-to. And yes, at some point I got away from it. And so I had it for the first time in many years today.
Really?
And it was good, but I see why I went away from it. It's just a little bit too greasy for me at this stage in my life.
When I was... Back in the day, we would have at the end of the night, there would be like a couple leftover crisp burritos up there under the warmer. And I got to a point where that was like my favorite thing, you know, like a soggy, crisp beef, greasy burrito. Really good.
Can I make one plea to Taco Time Northwest while we're here? Bring back the sweet potato Mexi fries on a full-time basis. I miss them so much.
The thing about them is, okay, so earlier today, Marco was saying, I really want to do those things that we do with Uncle Al, which I don't know how you really are involved with, but I want to do those
this
things.
Is concerning.
Where you throw them on the ground and they make a loud sound. What? Poppets.
Poppets. I love Poppets.
I've never been involved in
If you Poppets. Could have Poppets.
As much as I love Poppets, I love sweet potato Poppets so much more.
That's why we're going here.
If you could have Poppets every single day, you wouldn't love Poppets. But the fact that you can only have Poppets maybe around New Year's and then around the 4th of July means that you fucking love Poppets. And it is the same with sweet potato Mexi fries. Well, you don't get them all the time.
This is a horrible
Taco
thing.
Taco Time they Northwest were, knows when you need
they
them.
Were they were full on the menu time, full time. Yeah.
And I still loved them and got them every single time. So your take is on its face inaccurate, good sir.
They were. I don't even like them, but I'm supporting Al on this because I don't know why they got rid of them. But they are a pain in the ass. As a
Chris continuing his role is the ombudsman of the Pelton cast.
I didn't. They were a pain in the ass, but I didn't think that they needed to be taken away.
Also, you don't like them.
No, I prefer the regular fries. Man.
All right, we want to do a rating. For Taco Time Northwest.
Okay, so Taco Time Northwest, it's not the best taco or burrito in Seattle.
No.
It's not real tacos. Yeah.
But I think this was Seattle Met, maybe Seattle Magazine. A friend of mine today was saying they were really upset because they had seen the best fast food in Seattle was voted by the readers as Dick's. And the options were Dick's, Izell's, Little Woody's, and something else.
I don't know if any of those places other than Dick's are fast food.
We can discern that later. And I was saying, I don't even really know what they mean by fast food here. Exactly. I don't understand what it is. Like, is Tacos Chuki's fast food? But then
definitely
I realized right under our eyes, the best fast food in Seattle was right there. And that is Taco Time Northwest with no competitor.
No competitor? You don't think Dick's is a competitor?
Not even close.
Will this Dick's slander never cease?
I would say that Dick's is probably the only competitor.
Because it's the only thing that's actually fast food.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, there's got to be some other places that are fast food that we're not thinking of. But Dick's to me is number one and Taco Time is 1A.
Wow, you would vote if we had to do last summer to this summer, summer 2017 versus summer 2018. You're voting Dick's driving over Taco Time?
Yeah, I mean, Dick's won the competition, the fan competition last year. You remember that?
How many times do you have to incorrectly vote for Dick's?
I mean, it didn't pick Dick's in the final.
I'm going to blow your mind right here because I'm going to go Dick's.
Really?
Over Taco Time, just because there's way more Taco Times, which means a lot more inconsistencies.
That's a good point.
There are some Taco Times that are franchise Taco Times. They're not with the corporate thing, so they have a little couple weird things. They're trying to get rid of most of those lately, what
are
I can
really?
Tell. Yeah.
Good.
Some inside knowledge on them. Taco Time Northwest. Exclusively here.
But
on the podcast.
Yeah, some Taco Times are just way better than others. When we go to Dick's, like I feel like it's the same.
Oh, it's always great. Which by the way,
the similarity between the two is that there's a fake Dick's in Spokane also.
That is true. We need to look up when this Dick's Drive-In in Midway is opening.
We're supposed to be monitoring the situation closely.
I forgot about that.
We have not done a great job of updating
people.
I honestly did too until just now. It's great. It's outstanding.
I was like, oh, I'll just hear about it when it happens.
You definitely
and
will.
And then I will never go there.
Opening fall 2018.
Because I live two blocks from Loretta's. Why would I ever go to Dick's again?
when you have the actual best burger in Seattle
sometimes
two blocks away from you.
Sometimes you might be driving up I-5 and want to get off and eat there. Fall 2018, anyway, is the update there. I don't know if we have anything more specific on that. Yeah, okay.
You guys want to know the best Taco Time?
Yes.
Rose Hill, Kirkland is the best Taco
really?
Time
the
I've experienced.
Best I feel like we're privileged right here to have like the flagship Taco Time.
Well, I haven't been to the Fairwood one in a long time.
This supposedly
they
is
do
the
testing over here.
Testing
the
happens.
They
at
do
the
a lot
Fairwood
of testing.
Taco Time.
Well, there you go. There you go. I didn't realize how good we had it.
Wow, we have the worst Izell's. It's like borderline whether it should even be called Izell's.
All fair. Everything here is fair.
Have you guys had the habanero?
I looked at it today.
I'm good on habanero. I had mine on this podcast.
The world is good. How is it, by the way? I looked at it today and thought about it.
That's like my go-to crisp burrito.
Really?
Either I get that or the beef. I don't even get the regular chicken one anymore. Huh.
I'm going to have to get this next time that I go back to Taco Time, which will probably be within the week.
I was still working there when they tried out the first one, first habanero, and they did it. It was just like the regular chicken habanero or the regular crisp chicken burrito, and they just put like a little the habanero salsa in there. Eh. The new one, they got this special like cayenne pepper tortilla.
Interesting. Ah.
Yeah.
It sounds completely uninteresting to me. I'm not about it. But
so are these are hand rolled also?
Yes. Mm. Also, when I was still there, they were experimenting to see if they could go back to hand rolling the like beef and bean burritos.
Because they have a commitment to excellence at Taco Time Northwest.
Yes.
And what happened?
But they didn't do it.
It's impossible.
It's impossible to do, but they had to try.
That's fair.
It's just like those two items that aren't compostable. If they could be compostable, you believe that Taco Time Northwest would compost them.
I, you know what? I'm confident eventually Taco Time Northwest is going to get there.
Wow. Yeah, they have more compostable than before.
Yeah, I had to go and check. Like, it was different than I remembered because I'm usually not in the store when I'm eating. I'm usually eating it probably at your house, Tristan.
And the baby gives it a perfect 100 out of 100.
Yeah, he legitimately ate that crispy burrito.
Yeah, he took it out of my hand.
It's bigger than his head. I'm pretty sure.
He ate a lot of it.
They have a new poblano chowder that's pretty good.
A poblano chowder?
Yeah.
We're going to have Chris on a regular basis to update us on the Taco Time Northwest menu. I look forward to that segment. That's going to be one of my favorites.
Do you guys have any of the coconut, Baja coconut shrimp?
I dabble.
I've had the taco.
It was there, then left, now it's back.
Do you love it more because of that?
Yeah, I do. All things are great in moderation. That's weird. That's not a very me take. That's a very you take. It's only me with sweet potato because I don't like them that much.
Are we giving an actual rating to Taco Time Northwest on our scale?
It's really tough to give it a rating on the scale because it's so different than the other places.
90.
I feel like it's a 90 also.
I mean, I had tacos Chuki's on Friday night.
Really?
And a friend of mine that I was with was not prepared for the waiting in line, but I was like,
what did
Taco Time is not even like.
Tacos Chuki's think about it?
Oh, he thought it was great.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay, good.
I actually heard some people deliver some meh takes on Tacos Chuki's.
Really?
What?
I'm cutting them out of my life entirely.
Who were these people? Name names.
Friends of friends.
Friends of friends. Distant friends of friends.
Former friends of friends.
Yeah.
Wow. Man, I don't think I've ever heard a person say anything that was less than exemplary about Tacos Chuki's.
Right. Less than exuberant.
The problem is with Taco Time is that you can end up at a bad Taco Time.
There are only two Tacos Chuki's.
Chris is going to come back and give us ratings for individual Taco Times in the future.
Rose Hill, Kirkland, number one.
99. For now, though, it is time to change gears a little bit. And pour one out for our friends in Portland because they don't have Taco Time Northwest.
Yes. Poor bastards. Don't they have a Taco Time Northwest in Portland?
No.
They have the other Taco Time?
They do.
Wow.
And they also no longer have a playoff. It's your Blazers.
I don't think I've ever said that.
You're
thinking of somebody else here.
We're swept out of the postseason by the New Orleans Pelicans in one of the most shocking upsets. The first time, I believe, a 6 seed has ever swept a 3 seed in a best-of-7 series. So,
okay, this is not a shocking upset. There is one game difference between these two teams. I mean, it's shocking that it was a sweep.
Yes.
But
they can't win one game?
I mean, that's a little shocking to me. But if there was a 4-5 series that was a sweep, would that be shocking if the 5 seed swept a 4 seed?
It'd be still a little shocking. I mean, again, because of the fact that those teams are supposed to be really close.
It's the only sweep that's happening in the first round.
It is all true.
It wasn't great.
Now,
But there still is only one game separating these two teams. It's not like a traditional 3-6 matchup.
I think the more important argument is that
the Blazers suck and I hate them.
Three of these four games could have gone either way. Particularly the first one in Portland that was a 2-point game. The Blazers had multiple possessions down two with a chance to tie or take the lead. And if they win that game, I think the whole series looks entirely different at that point, because something, you know, I'm hesitant to ascribe too much to this, but New Orleans gained confidence from their success and Portland lost faith.
We were so young then.
I told this kid at the bowling alley, he had a Lillard jersey on, and somebody else was talking to him and he was like pointing at the number. And I just interjected myself. So that's how many playoff wins you'll have this year.
Oh, God.
But I only did that because, you know, I would like to see Portland win. But I didn't like that guy. So he's like an Atlanta fan. He has like an Atlanta Braves tattoo. So
well,
I was very confused by the Portland jersey.
Remember that Atlanta is in fact Black Portland, so maybe there's the symbiosis
full
there.
Circle. But the most important thing is Portland did us good this year, right? You had a good time going, the city of Portland, not the team, of course. They failed us miserably. You had a good time going down there, eating the food in Portland. It was a great place to be for a short period of time.
Now, the weather was also terrible. It was not that great. I mean, it was bad here in Seattle, too. I'm not blaming Portland, but it was not that great an experience.
Portland is excellent all the time in moderation.
So, I mean, yes, you are getting it in moderation. That's true.
We appreciate what they did for us. We don't appreciate anything about this playoff loss, and we're now a Sixers podcast.
Yeah, so we need
they
to
come up with... They haven't done anything for us.
The Sixers?
No, Portland.
Oh, Portland. They really didn't embrace us as much as they should have.
Well, we need to come up with a Trust the Process-themed name for our Sixers podcast. I'm pretty sure all of them are already taken.
Trust the Pelton Cast, something like that.
Okay, we'll keep working. Workshopping.
Keep working on it. I just gave it to you right there.
I'm really big Jazz fan right now.
Now that's the other team. So well, I want to talk about the Sixers for 1 second, then swing to the Jazz, because I feel like I'm actually a bigger Jazz fan than a Sixers fan, but that might change in round two.
Does your lifelong Sixers fandom, is it affected at all by the fact that Markelle Fultz is no longer playing games?
A little bit. I'm a little bit frustrated with them.
Well, he just has been benched in favor of T.J. McConnell, who is
more
effective.
He's not playing at all?
Yeah, he hasn't played since, I think, the first half of game three, off the top of my head.
I just became such a big Sixers fan in those 8 games that he was playing. That
including the triple-double. I don't think we twisted to that on this podcast.
I just became so attached to the Sixers players. So,
yeah.
You know, because of those 8 games that Markelle Fultz did play and the promise that he may play again in round two.
If they have a blowout, perhaps.
Is he the only Husky to reach the second round? Are there other Huskies still out there?
Are there other Huskies still out there? I don't think so.
There you go.
But I'd have to look it up to be sure. Yeah, because DeJounte Murray was eliminated.
He's the last Husky standing.
Marquise Chris Justin Holiday did not make it. Suffice it to say. Yeah, I think that might be it.
So I'm all in from here on out, provided the Jazz take care of business, which we should talk about now. I'm all in on the Sixers.
Well, there's a long ways to go in this series. I just want to note that. So, like, as rapidly as the Oklahoma City-Utah series turned after the Thunder's, not dominant, but strong game one victory, after which we debated whether the Jazz were doomed, and you won that debate.
Uh-huh.
But the series can still flip just as quickly, especially with the Thunder still having two of the three remaining games at home.
It's going to be hard with Russ suspended for game 5.
he already has been fined. He won't be suspended.
Ooh, did they already have an official thing on that? That
I mean, the fact that he's been fined and assessed a technical for his involvement in that play suggests that they would have
announced
suspension at the same time.
So they're saying that he was already subbed into the game.
I mean, also, the rule is you can't leave the vicinity of the bench area. He wasn't in the bench area, so...
They don't have a rule for this, like...
No, they don't. It's never happened before. It's truly a loophole in the rules.
Players should just be standing wherever.
So...
Yeah. Just, like, slide
Players
on
should just
over.
Be roaming around before fights happen.
I don't think you could do that. I think that would be against the rules in its own right. But this is a weird situation, an unusual situation, where he was about to check into the game and therefore was not on the bench and left the scorer's table. But the rule doesn't say you can't leave the scorer's table. It says you can't leave the bench area.
Does Raymond Felton, is he getting in trouble for punching a guy in the dick? Or?
No.
I didn't see that.
No further
they
punishment.
Don't want to consult with the MLS. And,
yeah. It's going to be, but they're not going to announce the suspension until after game 5 of the series.
Raymond Felton's body is punishment enough. So you're now all in on the Jazz, Chris?
Yeah, of course, especially after, I'm all in on anybody that's going against the Thunder.
Yes.
But especially Russell Westbrook's, like, he's going to shut that shit down. Marco Rubio. There's also other people on the team maybe you should worry about trying to shut down too, but
I compared it to my defense against players who are good at shooting anytime I play pickup basketball. I am not concerned about anyone else. That person is not scoring on me.
It's okay. Donovan Mitchell could score 40.
Not my fault. Not my fault.
I shut Rubio down. Still had like what? Like 13, 6, and 8 or something like that.
You looking for me for thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know much about basketball, so I obviously
would. Yeah.
I just love the Jazz. That's the thing, is it's kind of weird.
All right,
Joe Ingles fan.
Watching the Jazz
We're not
play.
Supposed to love the Jazz. Did you read the Sean Kemp article today?
I didn't, but I definitely want to hear about that in our book review portion that's coming up next.
Yeah, that was not as extensive. I mean, do we want to move into that?
No. I want to talk about the Jazz first. Well, I was saying to you that the difference between me as a young basketball fan and me as an adult basketball fan is that I can appreciate a player like Joe Ingles now. And every single time Joe Ingles shoots, I'm so excited. Like, I love Joe Ingles, and I would have hated him as a kid.
Obviously. I don't even know who that is.
Oh, man, he is unbelievable.
Lifelong Jazz fan.
Yes. I don't know anybody on the Jazz.
It's nice to have you around, so I'm the person who knows the least about basketball.
That's great, because we've checked off the player Tristan doesn't know segment with Chris, yeah. And it's a starter for a team in the playoffs. It's winning 3-1.
This is great. I'm sure of it.
He's like, if you were saying that I would have felt, if it would have happened against the Sonics in the 90s.
Oh,
I would have, and you're so right. Like, if Adam Keefe would have been knocking down threes, I would have been like, there is no person in the entire earth that I hate more than Adam Keefe.
If Adam Keefe would have been like trying to get the crowd into it,
fighting with playoff P. But it was just like the confidence that the Thunder had after game one.
I guess Dellef Schrempf would have been playoff D in this scenario.
Playoff D.
That's bad.
With the playoff P nickname, then winning this, like, more or less what I would consider a fluky game, and then listening to podcasts that you happen to be on, hearing people talk about how the Jazz, like, weren't prepared for the moment because they happened to lose an unlucky game. It was tough for me to listen to, and it's good that I know more about basketball than you do. Even though I sometimes am asking you who the players are while the game is happening. Like, tell me about this Royce O'Neal character.
Yeah, okay, that Royce O'Neal was the... You check you off that box. Yeah, you know, maybe it's like the NCAA tournament pool where the people who just pick based on the mascots sometimes tend to win. Maybe
know that the team with the better... I said to you, the Thunder are going to win the series easily because point differential doesn't exist.
Home court advantage exists and outweighs point differential.
You knew comeback for that. Gobert has been awesome. Ricky Rubio has been... I love watching Ricky Rubio, right? He's all over the place. Really don't get that excited when he's shooting still.
I
like the mid-range game.
Yeah, when he shoots... If he shoots the three off the dribble,
you don't want to see that. Donovan Mitchell scoring from every single angle. And their court with the Utah sunset and the state of Utah with the colors going through it. And the goddamn arches? How is that not their court all the time?
I mean, David Locke is right there with you.
Is he really?
So is Mitt Romney.
I don't know. Mitt Romney wasn't at the game where they wore the...
And the Rodney Hood jerseys over their button-up shirts.
No, it was a customized.
Customized. What does the 5 stand for?
It's for
the electoral college votes that he got. Boom!
It's for cancer initiative. Anti-cancer initiative known as 5 for the 5.
God damn it. This has been happening to me all week.
I just look at the box scores.
I dropped that on Nate Silver earlier today, so that was pretty.
Okay, you don't have cable, so you're not out there. Do they show these games at Loretta's? I wonder if there are people at Loretta's getting fired up about the Jazz.
I haven't been there lately.
I don't know what's happening. Yeah. You need to get Jake one out to Loretta's.
I went there after the Sounders game and some cheeseburgers.
Jake one, he hates the Thunder. But yes, he also surely hates the Jazz. So I wonder how he feels about this series.
I've seen his look at his Twitter today. He's definitely.
Wait, can we talk about the Jazz
about
logo?
The Jazz.
The Go Jazz logo with the Sonics skyline logo in place of the basketball in the Jazz J. You guys not familiar with this?
I think I've seen this, okay. Yeah. I'm for it.
Yeah.
I'm sure this is like a... Oh, no, I did see this. I think I retweeted it.
It's not quite as good as the Heat one when the Heat played the Thunder in the finals.
Oh, that was a good one. That was like...
It worked really well.
Yeah.
And the stakes were much higher. This is just a first-round series.
Yeah. It's all true.
And they're
never
going
to make it back to the finals.
I'm going to do a giant knock on wood.
Never is a long time.
Okay. We don't want to project things out too far.
They're not going to make it back until they move to the Eastern Conference when the Sonics expansion team comes in.
Minnesota's going to move to the East. That's neither here nor there.
Let's say that Game 6, by the way, if
they both are, because there's going to be the Sonics and there's going to be a Las Vegas team.
Well, you still only move one
two
team.
Teams in the West.
Have the Browns and the Ravens ever played each other? Like, they're in the same division, which is kind of crazy.
Like in a playoff game?
Yeah, but they wouldn't have played each other in the playoff game because the Browns don't do that often.
It's not really a thing for them.
It feels like they've kind of gotten over the rut. I don't know. There should be more hatred between them is what I'm saying, because we're never getting over this.
No. When we get a team back, it totally changes the entire...
Then all we're going to want to do is beat them like in an important fucking game.
I don't think it changes anything. The thing that it changes is we no longer care about Portland.
My dream is to beat them like in the finals. Like somehow we're in two separate conferences.
That's going to take reseeding. If they reseed without
in some sort of movie-like scenario where their team has to fold.
Is Oklahoma City in the West anyway?
Well, the population center of the country is way farther east than the geographic center.
Here with your population centers. Anyway,
what the hell does that mean?
There's way more teams in the East than there are in the West. So the teams that are in the Western Conference are farther east.
There are way less teams in the West, though, than there should be.
Yeah, because they moved all of them to the Midwest.
It's not great. Thanks, David, sir. But my question for you is, let's say, and I'm obviously getting ahead of myself here.
I refuse to answer.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have the conversation next week.
Maybe we will and maybe we won't. Maybe we will and maybe we won't.
Things might be going according to plan.
Can we do Sonics book reviews now?
Playoff P might be playing in a different city next year.
Utah. That's a city. Utah City.
Fact check that yourself. Can we get to Sonics book reviews?
Book and article reviews, because there's a lot of Sonics written content.
So while I was down in Portland, I went to Powell's, great bookstore, and checked and purchased...
Portland still has bookstores.
They do. They love them.
It's like the bookstore.
I actually purchased 3 Sonics books. We're only going to talk about 2 of them today because one of them is about the 1976-77 season and I still haven't finished it. So it's not as pertinent. But
you better get on that.
2 of them are autobiographies.
Time is a wasting.
It's only been 41 years. I've already read that book also. 2 of them are autobiographies of notable Sonics players from the last 2 decades. First, Ray Allen's From the Outside, which is...
Is this a new book?
Yeah, it just recently was released. So okay. That was something I was intending the whole time to go purchase when I got down to Portland and read it while I was there. But what I didn't realize, because I had just completely forgotten this existed, was that Vin Baker's memoir, God in Starbucks, came out last September. And it is amazing to me that no one talked about this because it is
Never
the most incredible autobiography I have ever
read.
So that's where we're going to get to the second.
Have you read Bo Knows Bo?
I must confess, I have not read that. We're going to start with Ray Allen's book because it's a little more straightforward. I thought it was a good read. I learned a lot about Ray's childhood. There wasn't necessarily a ton of revelatory stuff about his time in Seattle, but a few keynotes. And the first thing I think is interesting from a Seattle's perspective is actually, of course, that in Milwaukee, Ray played for longtime Sonics coach George Karl. They did not get along well. George was critical of Ray Allen in his book, and Ray returned that favor in his own book. Although it's kind of weird. So among other things, he says he suspected that Carl fired Terry Stotts, coach of your Blazers, as an assistant coach in Milwaukee.
Former coach of my Blazers.
Well, that's, yeah, we didn't get to that, did we? Because he was afraid that Stotts would replace him if Carl were fired. Also, Stotts told him that they couldn't golf together anymore because Carl didn't want him to golf with Ray Allen, which is kind of very petty. He says he learned the trade to Seattle from media while at practice, which was actually in Seattle in a weird twist because the Sonics played the Bucks in the first game after that trade deadline. He immediately went with and met with Nate McMillan and Howard Schultz at Howard Schultz's house, where Howard laid out his 5-year plan to win a championship.
Uh-huh. And in Oklahoma.
Ray says he loved what he was saying in one sense. You always want to play for an owner who reaches for the stars. In another, though, I found it almost laughable. You can't put a timetable on winning the title, which
there you can. Are there any owners out there like, we want to win a championship, but I don't know, like whenever.
You know, what if there were a team?
Did Ray Allen win a championship within 5 years?
No, not quite 5 years. Okay. That's right. It was six. If only there were a motto that could relate that, you know, the results will come if we stick to our plan. Uh-huh. And just stay diligent about that.
Trust the Pelton cast.
I don't like this.
He said his emotions were mixed after the trade to Seattle. Noted how unhappy Sonics fans were with the trade, which, of course, sent Gary Payton to Milwaukee. Yeah. But then puts out, the deal, if I could be objective for about it, was a disaster for the Bucks, as we have laid out in the past why it was such a bad trade for Milwaukee. He watched film with teammates of games earlier that season, like when they were scouting an opponent, and he noted Gary Payton just double teaming an opponent to break up a play, and he asked what the coverage was, and the teammates told him, oh, that's just GP making stuff up as he goes.
GP, he just plays defense.
He said in the summer of 2005, when he was a free agent in Seattle, said GM Rick Sun was initially reluctant to offer him a 5-year deal because of his age, but did eventually acquiesce and give him that deal after Ray pointed out that he was not the typical 30-year-old shooting guard because of his work ethic and habits. Bob Weiss was too calm as the team struggled in 2005-06 after he replaced Nate McMillan and, of course, was fired shortly into that season, replaced by Bob Hill, who would call up Ray after games to tell him how well he played. And lastly, Ray saves perhaps his sharpest Seattle criticism for Sam Presti, saying that he went to lunch with Presti shortly after he was hired as GM in June 2007 and felt that Sam had led him to believe at our lunch that I was an important part of his plans for the future. What a performance. He should have been in Hollywood because, of course, Allen was traded weeks later at the NBA draft for a package headlined by the pick that would become Jeff Green.
Okay, what about the he got game time?
That does come up in the book, naturally.
Yeah, what did he say about that?
That it was great to work with Denzel Washington, and that...
Nothing about him being too calm?
No, that did not come up. That, you know, he enjoyed acting.
Okay, one of my greatest memories, Ray Allen era, was being at the game with Tristan where he broke the record for most threes in a season.
Yep.
And he did it in the first half. He hit like...
He did it in the second quarter?
Yeah, he hit like 8 or 9 three-pointers by the second quarter.
Yeah, he was on one that night.
Yeah.
Doesn't come up in the book.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're skipping around a lot. This is more, I don't know.
Weird. I mean, when you win like two or three.
NBA, two championships?
Yeah.
And hit like one of the most key shots in the second championship.
Arguably the most important shot in NBA history. I think there's an argument.
In NBA history?
Yeah. It single-handedly ended up swinging a title.
If you talk to Skip Bayless, that's a huge thing.
That one is in the book.
Okay, so what about Vin Baker, God and Starbucks? Ironically, with Starbucks right there.
Yeah. So Vin Baker is very honest about his struggles with addiction, with both weed and then obviously alcoholism that derailed his NBA career and his life in general. He says that he first smoked weed on game day or like first played high in January 96 and ended up having 41 points against your Blazers, who were not your Blazers at the
who were also high,
and says, well, that was a little
Cliff Robinson was high as fuck, man.
In that superstitious way of all athletes, I tried to link cause with effect, so he got high before every game the remainder of the season except the All-Star game. And
why would you not get high at the All-Star game?
I know.
You wanted to take it seriously. It's literally the weird part.
One game.
I know.
He should have been high before.
So he believes that a lot of his drug and alcohol use stemmed from anxiety about performance in games, and felt that, you know, that smoking or later drinking before games helped relieve his nerves. But the issue that he had when he was smoking weed before games was he occasionally suffered a rapid heartbeat because of that. So he cut it out entirely.
Was there no drug testing in the 90s?
There was, but yeah,
only in the All-Star game.
Do you think that players no longer smoke weed in the NBA?
I don't know.
Well, I just saw the thing for the NFL that was like, I think it was the NFL, they're like, do a round of drug testing for weed coming up in the next few weeks. And then if anybody gets tested during that time, they won't get tested the rest of the year.
There's a limit to the number of times you're tested in season in the NBA. So like once that happens, you know that you're not going to be tested again. But certainly if you're smoking before every game, that would not be the solution there. So anyway, cut out weed entirely by the middle of the 96-97 season, his last in Milwaukee, but
that's a mistake.
Replaced weed with alcohol. He says that after his trade to Seattle was announced, he went on a three-day drinking binge, kind of feeling the pressure of this trade. Writes, I was a big fan of Sean Kemp, and now here I was trying to take his place. Gary Payton immediately embraced him when he got in the locker room, which solved one of Baker's fears about coming to Seattle. But he noticed immediately that there was a lot of heavy drinking among players. Some guys smoked weed too, but there was a small and dedicated group of partiers, guys who liked to go out after games at home and on the road and really cut loose, even more so than we had in Milwaukee. And as you might imagine, Gary Payton was prominent among that group.
Oh, man.
Vin writes, Vin writes, I've never seen anyone who could drink like Gary and seem to be unaffected. It was otherworldly.
Ugh, what an athlete.
Vin, it turns out, was affected and really began feeling sluggish after the 98 All-Star break during his first season in Seattle. His scoring average did dip somewhat in the second half from 24.4 points per game before the break to 17.5 after in identical minutes. But you wouldn't necessarily have noticed anything was wrong, I think, from the outside. He then tried to cut out his drinking during the 98 playoffs, and Gary told him during the Lakers series in the second round that he was struggling because he'd changed his routine and encouraged him to go out with him, which he did. Baker had 28 points in the closeout game 5, but generally struggled in the playoffs, and you'll recall was forced to play extended minutes against Shaquille O'Neal in that Lakers series because Jim McElvain was playing such limited minutes by that point in the postseason. The following season, of course, was the NBA lockout, and rather than work out all summer, I drank. In one of perhaps the most amusing anecdotes in the book, he says that he saw Sean Kemp at the charity game the Players Association held in Atlantic City during the lockout and told Gary, hey, did you see Sean? Man, he looks like hell. GP just laughed. Bro, have you looked in the mirror lately? It would be funny if it weren't so sad. Vin says he showed up for camp in 90 after the lockout was settled, weighing nearly 300 pounds, 40 to 50 pounds over his playing weight. And if you'll recall that season after the lockout, he missed his first 16 free throws of the season. And he says it was after that struggle with, you know, he'd never been a good free throw shooter, but not nearly that bad, that a friend suggested drinking before games to relieve the anxiety.
Yeah,
and so he started drinking in the afternoon before games. The following season, Vin was a free agent. The Sonics originally proposed a 1-year deal for him, but eventually gave in and signed him to the 7-year, $86.6 million
deal. Difference. They're like, we want to give you a 1-year deal, but instead here's 5 more and like...
Six more
and how many million?
Great math, though. After he signed that contract, Wally Walker had him see a counselor in fall of 99 to treat his what they believed at the time was depression, which did not, it turned out, help out Baker at all. He notes that he was kicked out of practice in November 2000 by Paul Westfall and called Wally immediately after that and told him, quote, you need to do something. The next day, Westfall was fired. confirming what Westfall had always said about blaming Baker for his demise as the Sonics coach.
Kind of crazy that Vin Baker in this particular state would have that much influence.
Yeah, I mean, also the Sonics struggled poorly, and a young Kevin Pelton was bringing fired Paul Westfall sides two games at Key Arena. This is 2000. So Nate McMillan took over as coach at that point. And then also...
Do you remember that? It was the day after Thanksgiving game that we would always play.
Was it?
We had fire Paul Westfall signs, you and me and Mikey and Wynn.
Nice.
Yeah.
Shuts the tie.
hilarious tweet by Amy Swindle today.
Wow, we are really getting in the tie weeds. So the spring of 2001 was when Howard Schultz purchased the team, and he invited Vin Baker and his parents to the house afterwards and told him, quote, "Vinny, you need to make some changes." That did not happen. Instead, what happened is that instead of just drinking in the afternoon before games...
He's also drinking coffee, so it's like a Four Loko type of thing.
No. Vin began drinking during games out of a bottle that he was filling with Bacardi 151 because of the fact that it was clear. He puts this in the 2001... I don't know. Just maybe it was Bacardi Limon at that point. He puts this in the 2001-02 season, but I have heard from a player who played with Vin Baker in earlier years that at that point that they had found alcohol in his locker. But it was in December 2001 that he got a call from Wally Walker telling him that the team knew that he was drinking out of this bottle, that they had it, and said that Howard would deal with it once he got back from vacation he was on. And so Vin went out again to Howard's house for this meeting, and it ended with Howard Schultz showing support to him instead of really coming down hard on him. Despite that, after the end...
What a leader.
After the end of the 2001-02 season, Vin skipped the exit meetings, and that was basically it for him. He notes, this was one of the most interesting anecdotes out there. He met with the Celtics before the trade to Boston, who confronted him about the drinking, and he told them that he was just an ordinary NBA drinker, that sometimes he'd perhaps come to practice hungover, but you know, nothing like the drinking constantly, because he was at this point an alcoholic. And notes, here's the thing about confronting an addict. It's almost more uncomfortable and difficult for the person who is doing the confronting than it is for the addict himself. The addict is accustomed to lying, hurting, deceiving, so it barely registers as wrongful behavior. But the accuser is not accustomed to those things, so he feels terrible about the confrontation. He wants to believe the rumors are untrue. The Celtics wanted to believe that they were acquiring the Vin Baker of 1998. They wanted me to tell them that everything was okay, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
Why and not? Yet, this is not the most crazy revelation in the book. Because that's that Vin Baker, while playing for the Sonics and subsequently, maintained separate houses and lives with two women, fathering children with both of them subsequently, who like sort of knew about each other, but not really.
Oh, they knew.
Like, where were these at?
I think both in Connecticut.
Huh.
And one of whom he eventually married after getting sober. So... following his NBA career.
There was a rock, paper, scissors between the two.
Nothing like that. He went bankrupt and became non-functional due to his alcoholism in 2011, but went briefly to rehab for, I think at that point, about a third or fourth time, but the first time it was really voluntary as opposed to a team sending him there, and recommitted to the church. Of course, you'll recall that his father was a pastor in his hometown of Old Saybrook, Connecticut. Subsequently managed a Starbucks with Howard Schultz providing him assistance and guidance right up until the point that he left to join the Milwaukee Bucks as a broadcaster and volunteer assistant coach in the summer of 2016. And then midway through this season was promoted to the coaching staff full time.
Really?
After they fired Jason Kidd.
So he's an assistant coach of the Bucks.
He is. Yeah.
Good for Vin Baker.
Yeah. So, you know, he's cleaned up his life, and I think it's a terrific redemption story. It's a great read. I really enjoyed this book, and I'm stunned that it hasn't gotten more attention, because it is so good.
I have not heard of it.
I mean, I think it's just because
I haven't heard the name Vin Baker in 10 years.
Because he is such an afterthought.
I mean, there were definitely a lot of stories when he first, like, people realized that he was managing the Starbucks. Like, why is Vin Baker managing a Starbucks? And, like, about his rise and fall and perhaps rise again. So... I guess, you know, for some reason, the book didn't enter the mainstream consciousness in the same way.
Interesting. I mean, it's very much to me like a 90s basketball story. I feel like it falls in line.
Oh, yeah. There's similarities to Kemp, obviously.
And the similarities to Kemp, but a lot of players from the era. I mean, it was kind of a lost era with regards to basketball players because of all the things that were available to players at the time. And maybe it was happening too quickly, and players now have kind of a better model with how to act.
But I think the other aspect of it is probably there was a lot of self-medication that was going on. And now that there's this, I don't want to give the NBA too much credit here, but there's a greater openness to players admitting anxiety and struggles with mental health so that you can deal with them in a constructive and positive way as opposed to drinking your problems away and creating new ones.
And now you have to get like out in front of it, because you never know, somebody's gonna post something on Instagram.
That's another good
Twitter
point, yeah.
Or whatever. Like you can't hide as much as you could back then.
Yep. Yes. He was able to do this secretly for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were always whispers about, you know, he mentions like that there was euphemisms in the paper about like needing to commit himself to the game or perhaps enjoying himself too much, but nobody realized until, you know, he went to rehab, I think, while he was with the Celtics, that he was a full-blown alcoholic. So,
well, good for Vin Baker. What about the Sean Kemp story today in the Players Tribune? Anything interesting that come out of that?
I mean, I'm not going to summarize it. It's 1,500 words. Just go read it.
It's pretty basic. Yeah. Like, oh, I remember we used to play basketball and it was good, and I wish that there was a team in Seattle.
He does tell a story about Bill Laimbeer that appears to be apocryphal, about Laimbeer sending him to the hospital after he dunked on Laimbeer, which is true. He dunked on him. That video exists, but
okay,
there's
yeah,
no indication of him going to the hospital afterwards.
I Googled Bill Laimbeer, Sean Kemp hospital, and I couldn't find anything except the video of Kemp dunking on him. Yeah. So I have no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And if Al doesn't know, it didn't happen.
I'm not going to go
that
far.
Like, I think he would remember, Sean Kemp dunked on Bill Laimbeer, and then Bill Laimbeer pushed him in the back like Tristan might do on a basketball
court. I mean, it would be a story if a Sonics player went to the hospital, particularly if it was Sean Kemp. So yeah. Even a young Sean Kemp, so I think that would be out there. All right, should we get to current Seattle sports after a long trip down memory lane?
I mean, Sean Kemp did say that him and Gary used to go kick it.
They sure did.
Well, the general theme of this seems to be that Gary Payton was he was able to handle his business,
but the other players who imitated him were not. So that was the gift and the curse for the Sonics. All right, let's talk about the successor venue to the Key Arena in which Ray Allen, Vin Baker, Gary Payton and Sean Kemp all once played. The draft environmental impact study for the Oakview Group's rebuild of Key Arena was released on, what was this, Monday? There will be a 45-day comment period through June 7th, including a public hearing on May 4th to discuss the findings. I think the most notable thing here was, so the way the environmental impact study works is they compare different options across a variety of impacts on the environment. And so the alternatives they studied were doing nothing, just continuing with Key Arena is the Oakview plan, and then a modified version of the Oakview plan with a few slight changes that would be a longer rebuild timetable with less night construction, a smaller parking garage, fewer impacts in terms of signage on the arena and then on along First Avenue North there. And then, as Chris Daniels of King 5 noted prominently, the alternative also calls for Thomas Street between First Avenue and Warren along the edge of the arena to become a VUNERF, a street with a raised street bed where pedestrians and bicyclists have priority over motorists that would be closed to vehicle traffic during games and events. What they didn't consider an alternative was the plan put forward by the Chris Hansen group that if their arena was improved in the Soto area, that they intended to renovate Key Arena into a concert-only venue, which would, of course, have very different impacts in terms of traffic and parking and things like that. So that wasn't in here. The impact they did find in terms of traffic, the study estimates that weekday pregame speed westbound on Mercer Street, so heading towards the arena from I-5 in 2020 when it opens, is projected to drop from 10 miles an hour currently, the peak speed possible with the lights there, to 5 miles an hour, assuming there's no mitigation done to improve that traffic. And by 2035, kind of the base case, if they do nothing, is that westbound traffic on Mercer Street would be going 5.5 miles an hour at that point, and that would drop to 4.5 miles per hour, with a game at the rebuilt Key Arena. In terms of parking, their conclusion is that alternative one, the Oakview Group rebuild, would most likely result in occupancies on both weekdays and Saturdays that cause a substantial number of vehicles to circulate for multiple blocks looking for parking and increasing conflicts with other modes of transportation. So,
what does it mean?
I mean, I don't think there was anything in here that is certainly like, oh, this is going to create a major problem for this project going forward. I think it's possible that some of the alternatives that I mentioned, that they could, the city could encourage Oakview Group to make those changes to the plan for the benefits that are laid out by the environmental impact study, including a smaller parking garage. But, you know, we'll see what transpires there.
A smaller parking garage.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're planning a large, I believe, a 450-space parking garage underneath, and the alternative called for, I want to say, 200 or 250-space parking garage instead.
Wouldn't that mean more people parking on the streets, though?
Yes, but those people would be parking more distantly from the arena, and so therefore it would have less adverse impact on traffic.
They're going to have to do something about Mercer in some capacity, though.
I mean, I think that's probably just going to be in terms of this mitigation, in terms of how lights are handled, you know, whether you're closing intersections entirely and having a uniformed police officer directing traffic as we see after Seahawks or Mariners games or Sounders games. So I think those are the possibilities.
So it would, right now, it would probably be take a miracle for the Chris Hansen group to...
No, I don't think that. It would take...
You think there's a better chance?
It would take an unexpected disaster for the Key Arena rebuild to not continue apace, but I don't think that the two arena option is like off the table. I think that's in consideration. So we'll stay tuned on that. All right. I think it is time for a special guest edition of your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at
you. I got some Mariners fucking hot takes for you.
Oh, no.
But they don't have too much to do with the play on the field as much as they have to do with the play on the upper lip. The Mariners have been doing okay, as some in Seattle would say, pretty okay for the year so far. But I just feel like they could be doing a lot better if they had mustaches.
Yeah.
I feel like if every person on the roster and the coaches had a mustache, we're guaranteed World Series, at least in the World Series.
I mean, it's hard to disprove.
Prove me wrong. That's what I say.
They're going to have to try it out at the very least.
I say prove me wrong, not say the same thing as me 2 weeks later on Twitter on a separate mustache account.
Oh, wow.
How do we think Ichiro would look with a mustache?
I think he'd look great with a mustache. How do we think Ichiro would
look? He's not going to look very different than he looks right now.
How do we think Ichiro would look not playing for the Mariners?
Great.
He looks very sad.
He would look so good in a Marlins jersey like last year.
People are angry that the Mariners sent down Guillermo Heredia, whoever that is again. I still have not figured that out from last week, and not Ichiro.
Well, he's a better player than Ichiro this year.
That seems indisputably accurate.
Yeah. I don't even know the stats, but I just know that because I'm a huge baseball fan this year, and I'm a huge fan of the Seattle Mariners.
I'm a huge fan of mustaches.
You've been tracking Mariners players with mustaches, and I'm shocked how many of them there are. It kind of just keeps going.
Well,
I mean, there's been a lot of Mariners.
Like, what do you start out in 1977? You're going to get a lot of mustaches, okay?
I mean, think about how many, like, let's say an average of 40 players a year play for the Mariners. That's even probably a little conservative. They've been around for over 40 years now. This is their 42nd season. So that's 1,600 players. I mean, obviously, there's different... The players
there's
repeat.
Be, there's
so
a lot of
the
same
many,
players over the years, okay? And then the thing is, once you get into the 90s, people are like, I don't want a mustache, you know? Randy's got a mustache. Except Randy Johnson's mustache was weak.
Oh, wow. Now, that's a hot take. That is a hot take.
My mustache on my face right now is at least 4.5 times better than Randy Johnson's mustache ever was and ever will be.
I mean, I think that's more a credit to your mustache than it is a discredit to Randy Johnson. It is an impressive mustache. So your mustache ranks 4.5 Randy Johnson's?
So when I was a kid, I thought Randy Johnson was my father because they look the same.
I can see that. Checks out. Your father was not 6'10".
No, but he had a better mustache than Randy Johnson. Oh,
wow. Wow.
Wow.
I'm doing an extreme research.
Are you trying to look? You can't find a good picture of Randy Johnson with a decent mustache. It's like a solid, slim, nothing. There's nothing hanging out. It's just like he has hair on all over his lip, but not great.
I feel like his hair might have been too light for the mustache to really show up.
You know, that is a big problem that I've been noticing.
Have you even gotten to Henry Cotto yet?
I haven't seen Henry Cotto.
I love Henry Cotto's mustache. I tweeted a couple times, I believe.
Okay, good.
Who has the best mustache in Mariners history then?
Okay.
It's clearly not Randy Johnson.
Goose Gossage is pretty good. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
But I would say that my favorite would be Larry Cox, who I would put in the Mustache Hall of Fame.
Wow. Mustache Hall of Fame.
That's fulfilling for the first time. The baseball player none of us have ever heard of category on the Pelton Cast.
Is a career 221 average. Okay.
That's a solid mustache.
He hit 12 home runs in 9 years. That's more than one a year.
That's 12 more home runs. Man,
Henry Cotto's mustache really maintained for a long time, though.
Yeah.
He was committed. Look at this one right there. I feel like he must have posted that at some point.
Yeah, that one on the right, on the top right. Yeah.
Wow, that is great.
It's thin. It's not as, you know, it's not as good as a Larry Cox.
How do we feel Ruinous Elias would look with a mustache now that he's back with the Mariners?
I feel like
everybody would look good with a mustache. Yes. The entire team to have it.
Yes, everyone should have the mustache. Okay? The problem is genetically, some people just don't, they have like, they don't, can't get a lot of hair there.
I could never grow the mustache that you have.
What have you
no,
just
but you have a solid base there.
What if you just hate the idea of mustache hair touching your upper lip?
Touching, oh, like down here?
Yeah.
I'm
going with the pencil thin mustache as part of my beard.
Very little in the mustache area.
I can't stand it.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as Ken Griffey Jr.'s mustache.
Oh, wow.
Which was like maybe a couple colored pencil marks on his lip. I mean, his dad's mustache was 10 times better, and it's still not even that good.
I think Ken Griffey Jr. on the Simpsons episode that he guest starred on, I'm pretty sure he had a mustache on that episode.
It sounds about right. It checks out.
Yeah, I'm sure they made it a lot better than it is. You know, exaggerated animation. You know, the one thing that bothers me a lot is that Lou Piniella never grew a mustache.
He seems like
pictures of him, he has what I'd like to call a great mustache bed. Just a huge like area between his nose and his upper lip that, you know, would serve as a great bed for a nice mustache.
He really just seems like the type of person who would have a mustache also.
Yeah.
I feel like Lou Piniella would have been, there's King Griffey Jr. They really kind of accurately reflected it, I feel.
That does not look like King Griffey Jr.
No, I mean, it doesn't look like him, but the mustache is probably an accurate reflection. I mean, you could tell me that Lou Piniella secretly had a mustache at some point, and I would 100% believe it.
I saw a picture the other day. It was like when the Mariners did the future jerseys, right? And so it was in the dugout, and Lou Piniella's kind of the background. But he's like scruffed up.
He was definitely scruffed up.
So I could see like, oh, he has like some gray hair there, but inside Lou Piniella business back in the day at Safeco Field when he was still there, he had his own little locker room in the back of his office. had all his like old Yankees jersey and cleats and stuff. But he also had a like little mini fridge with half gallons of liquor.
Oh, really?
Yes. And they were all like had barely any left in them.
I was telling Luca we were playing Kicker Feet Baseball about Wade Boggs, and the only thing that I really care about Wade Boggs is his proficient drinking on road trips. But I feel like it's very tough to explain to Luca that he would drink 50 beers on a flight from the East Coast to the West Coast.
It was more than that, wasn't it? Or am I just
confused? It's whatever the Always the Sunny in Philadelphia says it was.
That's an excellent point.
Have you guys ever heard of the Mariner Dick Pole?
No.
Probably the greatest name in Mariners history.
It is quite a name.
You have a mustache?
Yes, he did.
I'm not surprised.
Kind of weak. He was a pitcher. He went 7-12 in 1977.
You know, if he had famously hit a home run off the foul pole like Johnny Pesquet, then it could have been the pole pole.
But he also played for the Portland Beavers.
Oh, there you go.
Any other Mariners thoughts? Do you have any other hot takes?
I mean, you know, I don't have hot takes on Guillermo Herrera. Yeah, other people do. I'm just making people aware that those hot takes
One
exist.
One hot take we I had mean, last are they... week was that the Sounders would score a point.
Well, they had previously scored a point, but they did. They scored a bunch of goals and
they
got a win.
Three.
They won a game 3-1 over Minnesota United. It only took, what, 5 matches?
Four.
Okay. Dominated the first half with goals from Gustav Svensson, a rare Gustav Svensson goal from deep, and then Will Bruin saw
it. Yeah, that was like 30 yards out.
Yep, quite a strike from Gustav Svensson. Then a shaky second half, I would say, that Minnesota United pulled back with 2-1 and threatened to equalize the game before Jordy Lehm sealed it with a late goal set up by Clint Dempsey, who came off the bench in his first match in 5 weeks for the Sounders, playing a key role in that spot. We saw Osvaldo Alonso make his first start, pushing Christian Roldan to central midfield. Alex Roldan, notably, retained his starting spot despite the return of Victor Rodriguez and Magnus Wolf-Eichrem to the 18. The Sounders in this game dominated the shot-based expected goals with 2.5 to 1.6 for Minnesota United. Had a slightly closer margin, but still led in non-shot expected goals, 1.7 to 1.3. Chris, you were at this match. What did you see?
They look so good, but Minnesota is not a good team at all.
They are very bad, yes. That is accurate.
So it was great just so they can just feel that confidence.
Yeah, take care of business.
It was like a little surprising that Smetscher didn't put Dempsey in the starting 11.
I was stunned by it.
I was also surprised that Ozzy Alonso cut his hair because he was kind of growing it out. He had a nice wave going.
No mustache, though.
Should grow a mustache.
No. I think Ozzy would look good with a mustache.
But Dempsey came in, and I thought he was going to score. But he set up a score, so...
A rare Jordy Lehm goal.
His first MLS goal.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I think that they dominated the game. There was that moment it was 2-0. Minnesota scored a goal. It kind of seemed to me fluky.
Yeah, I mean, that goal, it wasn't against the run of play. I mean, they were kind of controlling things at that point, but the actual goal itself was pretty fluky.
And the Gustav Svensson goal was so great. It was, there was 22 passes.
Really?
Leading up to that.
I didn't
yes.
see that.
22 passes. Then he just nails it 30 yards out. Golazo, as they like to say.
Yep.
I don't like that word. And I'm sorry I said it.
Well, you can take it back now. Yeah. The Sounders, for the third consecutive Sunday, will be playing on national TV this weekend on FS1 at 6 p.m. as they open up Bank of California Stadium against LAFC, who, of course, previously played the first match in franchise history at Century
Field. They're
playing
a lot of notable matches against LAFC.
Really are. Yeah, very historic matches against LAFC, who is tied for second in the West so far with 12 points, despite playing all 6 matches naturally on the road. One of those against the crosstown rival, LA Galaxy.
I don't even know. How would you feel if that was your team? Like, you don't have a home game at all? Like,
well, the stadium wasn't ready yet. They just opened it this week. So, I mean, now they've done so well, and they're going to get a bunch of home games in the rest of the season. It's a pretty favorable position, I think, for LAFC.
That's unfair to us, though.
Well, I mean, they had to go out and win the games. I mean, we had that opportunity. They are 8th in 538 Soccer Power Index, 4th in the Western Conference. Carlos Vela is tied for 2nd in MLS with 5 goals. Diego Rossi tied for 2nd with 4 assists.
All while running for governor of Washington State.
Nope. He's not even running for governor anymore. He's running for state senate, isn't he? For the U.S. Senate. That combination actually...
Can you run for 2 different things?
At the same time.
Hey, I'll do this one if I don't get that one.
We'll see. Combination went in the opposite direction in the opener against the Sounders when Vela set up Rossi for the only goal in their 1-0 season opening win against the Sounders.
So LAFC spoiled the Sounders season opener here in Seattle. What do we think the chances are? Can we do percentage chances of victory for the Sounders for the first time all year? Because they have a victory for once.
I suppose we can. It's just going to be me reading Soccer Power Index projection as usual.
Chances for victory, I mean, there is a chance of a tie.
Yes, there are three options in soccer.
But I feel pretty confident that the Sounders will get another 3 points.
All right. So what are the chances that the Sounders spoil the opening of LAFC Stadium, much as they did the Sounders 2018 season?
100%.
I was going to say 25%, but that appears to be a little too pessimistic. 538 says 29% for the Sounders. I mean, I think the thing is, as much as they're back at full strength, and that's exciting to see, this also is going to be a pretty wild atmosphere for LAFC for their first game. I mean, we were at the first ever Sounders game. We remember how exciting that was.
Yeah, but they hadn't played like a
6 matches?
Month of game, you yeah, know, that's true. A month's
but
worth
you
of games.
You didn't get to see, I mean, I guess maybe you did if you went to the game against the Galaxy, but you didn't get to see them at your new stadium. I think that's still going to be some excitement.
I just think it's a recycled, like, it's the old Chivas USA. It's not like a brand new team in my mind.
Well, new players, new jerseys.
Well, yeah.
Hold on. Let's move to UW Sports. We start with baseball, who, after moving on the rundown last week, threatened to drop off it by losing 2 of 3 at Cal, dropping to 4th in the Pac-12 at 9-6. They are hosting WSU in the Baseball Apple Cup this weekend. A matchup they should have the advantage in is the Cougars are 5-10 so far in conference play.
Get it together, UW Baseball, to stay on the Peltoncast rundown.
This is an important thing.
I know, that's what you're competing for.
UW Softball got a rough weekend for UW Softball, which was swept at number 3 UCLA last week. Oof. And 2 of the 3 games were decided by just 1 run, but the Huskies dropped to 3rd in the conference at 12-5 behind UCLA 15-3 and Oregon 12-3. But have a chance to move back up to 2nd this weekend as they host the Ducks in a matchup that will likely decide 2nd place in the conference.
So how many of those games are you guys going to?
All of them.
It's a tough weekend with so much basketball.
I mean, this weekend will decide whether we're a softball school or not.
True. On the men's basketball front, Matisse Thybulle made it official as the deadline passed that he will decline to declare for the NBA draft and will return for his senior season. He told Percy Allen of the Seattle Times, "The NBA is really enticing, and it was definitely something that I seriously considered when the season was over. I talked it over with my family, and we came to the conclusion that it would be in my best interest to stay and get my degree in communications and grow as a basketball player and take this last year to mature and fine-tune everything so I can be fully prepared to take that next step when it's time."
And as we've discussed extensively, had he declared, especially if he wouldn't have hired an agent, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal, and I think there was a good chance that he was coming back. But now this means that there's a chance that Matisse Thybulle will get on the radar, because you mentioned he's not really on the radar of NBA scouts right now.
He's on the radar. I mean, I had a conversation with some front office types about Matisse Thybulle and whether he would declare. Noah Dickerson is not, I would say, on the radar. So despite the fact that he has declared, I think it's safe to assume that he will withdraw from the draft and expect that the Huskies will have all of their rotation players back next season.
Huge news.
Yeah.
Huge news here. And so next year, Matisse could be a player who can play his way into being like an early second round type.
Yeah, I think that would be the hope from him.
and has a chance. I think you mentioned this from Fran Fraschilla. Is that who it was from? Mark Stein?
Yeah, Fran Fraschilla, yes.
That he looks like he might be the best defensive player in all of college basketball next year.
That was a pretty hot take because, you know, bigs are usually so much better defensively than wings. But I think the best perimeter defender in the country is in play. I don't know if Matisse Thybulle could grow a great mustache. I don't mean to impugn Matisse Thybulle. I don't think that's his thing.
I mean, the problem is these days, nobody's willing to commit.
The commitment is the issue. At football, we both missed the UW spring game for, I think, the first time. And were you there? You're giving me a look like you were there.
Did you go last year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, the thing is, first off, it's not really a spring game at this point. It's like mostly a scrimmage. It's mostly a practice with a little bit of scrimmage. But there was an exciting final play as Coach Pete set up the offense with a first and goal from the 10 and put the game on the line based on whether they could score on those four downs. And it came down to 4th and 1, a handoff to Sean McGrew to determine the winner. And he was stopped short at the goal line, giving the defense a 37-33 win.
Yes!
You should always pass for the one.
Go, Dogs!
This tells me anything.
Excellent point. So some of the standouts from the spring, redshirt freshman Jake Hayner emerged as the favorite to serve as the backup to Jake Browning in the competition, of course, between the Jakes against the two Jacobs, Eason, who won't be eligible this year as a transfer, and Sermon, and then Colson Yankoff, who will have to change his name to some.
Okay, speaking of Jakes, did you guys already talk about the Jake Locker article?
We did. I didn't read that. Well,
really?
Yeah, give us the takeaways. The book
we like to call them Jakeaways when talking about UW comics.
Oh, no. Just stop the pod now.
Yeah, from what I can Jake away from it, Jake just didn't want to play NFL football anymore.
I mean, how much was it the concern about kind of the physical toll as opposed to just
apparently
not enjoying it?
Nothing.
Okay, it was just
which
just
I enjoy? It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
He just wanted to put his family and faith first.
Well, that takes a lot of conviction, so kudos to him. Other standouts from the spring.
Kudos to him.
Kudos, Jake.
Have you considered growing a mustache?
It's an easy to make the decision you want to be a fucking stay-at-home dad when you have like $20 million where you can just be like, I'm just going to stay at home and be a dad for a while.
Takes real conviction.
I'm going to rebuild my grandparents' house.
I mean, there's a lot of NFL players who made $20 million. And
Matt
few of them
Hasselbeck convinced me to go to this. He wasn't even religious during his UW days, apparently. But really? Matt Hasselbeck in Tennessee got him into it.
Really?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Has Matt Hasselbeck, will he convince anyone to go to the Anna Faris movie? What is that, Overboard? I believe that is.
The remake of the
have you seen
Goldie
the
Hawn, Kurt Russell movie?
I haven't seen it. Wait, so
okay.
There features a Matt Hasselbeck jersey.
Yes.
But it's a Matt
but
Hasselbeck
it's the newer
jersey.
It's the newer jersey, which he never wore.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
It's actually supposed to be a Matt Hasselbeck jersey. Though.
It says Hasselbeck.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the number 8 Seahawks. It says Hasselbeck.
But
yeah.
Why?
It's set in the Northwest.
But
are you familiar with the original movie Overboard?
Not, but okay, just because it's set in the Northwest, aren't out there wearing Matt Hasselbeck new jerseys in the North. So it's not a Russell Wilson jersey; it's a Matt Hasselbeck jersey. Is it set in the Northwest in like 2005?
No, because they're current jerseys. Maybe these questions will be revealed in the full movie, but at this point they remain mysterious.
Those questions to be revealed.
The original movie Overboard. All right, Goldie Hawn is like a rich lady.
Uh-huh.
She falls overboard, fucking knocks her head off off of a yacht,
mm-hmm.
and then ends up hanging out with Kurt Russell and his like sons. I don't know if it's two or three kids, maybe, but she has amnesia, so Kurt Russell convinces her that like she's his wife. And then she's supposed to be with them instead of being like a rich lady on a yacht. So the new remake
flips the script.
Flipping it. It's the guy
and
has amnesia. And then she's like, here, get a Hasselbeck jersey. My ex-husband is a Seahawks fan.
In the original one, was the person wearing like a Jim Zorn, like 90s jersey?
No football reference, as far as I know. Unclear.
He was wearing a Dave Craig, like 2000s era jersey.
That one was set in Portland, correct?
The setting I'm not aware of.
I believe I read Portland. So anyways, like I was saying, redshirt freshman Kate Otten, another standout of Husky Springbok. He tied with fellow tight end Hunter Bryant for a scrimmage high five catches, or practice high five catches on Saturday.
There's a pretty big Thrill Disley sized void at tight end.
There is. I mean, Hunter Bryant's going to be great, like, but he's basically a giant slot receiver. Sophomore cornerback Elijah Molden won the Best Hands Award for defensive backs with his 6 interceptions throughout the spring, one more than Miles Bryant and Keith Taylor.
Are they doing an award for like one for the spring?
Yeah, they do one for spring, one for fall practice, and I think one during the season, I believe is what I read. Keith Taylor, also a standout, playing boundary corner with Austin Joyner, missing out on spring practice. And then at a position that was troublesome for the Huskies last season.
I feel like I've forgotten this. I had some overboard-style amnesia about the kicking game from last year.
Redshirt freshman Peyton Henry, a walk-on, emerges the primary kicker during the spring, so that'll be interesting to follow. Some 4 months from now.
there was a, like, the Clemson spring game was on TV, and those people play games in the Southeast. Like, at UW, we're just like doing these casual scrimmages, right?
I mean, obviously it's not as big a deal here, but that's also just Coach Pete. Like, they played games before. Coach Pete ain't having that.
Why is it even a thing down there? Like,
just like the
because there's two seasons. There's football season, and then there's spring football season.
So it like randomly came on, and Luca was like, "Oh, is it football season again?" I'm like, "No, there is a long time to go.
There's going to be a lot of summer."
I'm like, it might be football season if you lived in South Carolina, but it's not football season here. But hydroplane season.
Now you got a couple months. What it is schedule season. So the NFL schedule revealed Thursday. The Seahawks will make the maximum 5 appearances on national TV playing Monday Night Football
at home.
Yeah, Monday Night Football at Chicago and versus Minnesota, Thursday Night Football versus Green Bay, Sunday Night Football versus San Francisco, and Richard Sherman's return to Seattle and the Kansas City Chiefs. And then a week 7 bye for the Seahawks after their trip to London to face the Oakland Raiders. Do we have schedule takes?
Is there any other team that has that many primetime games?
I gotta assume that the other, like, you know, New England, I'm sure, must have that many games. But I was a little surprised by it, given that it didn't seem like the Seahawks would be quite as big a draw coming off a non-playoff season, having lost several of their most prominent players. But, you know, Russell Wilson, I guess, is still a major draw.
So they will have played 2 home games before the month of November.
Wow, that's it?
Right?
They'll starting play 2 on the road. Denver, Chicago, right?
Yes. It goes 2 road, 1 home, 1 road, 1 home, 2 road.
Counting the Raiders, which is something of a neutral site game, but yes.
But it's still technically a road game, and the bye week in there. So by week 9, they will have played 2 home games before then.
Which conversely means, starting in week 9, they will play 6 of their final 8 games at home.
So I'm saying that we maybe should prepare ourselves.
Wait, that's not right. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, yeah.
They didn't change the amount of games the teams are playing.
Okay. Yeah, let's just check out. But I miscounted that week after the bye.
The other thing is that you kind of look at the early season road games. I mean, we really don't have a sense of how good these teams are going to be right now.
Or how good the Seahawks are going to be.
That too. But you look at Broncos, at Bears. These are some of the easiest road games they're going to be playing all year.
I mean,
probably.
Everyone gets caught up in, like, oh, 2 road games to start the season, how brutal. Like, look, you're still going to, as I said on the podcast with Zach Whitman, which, again, you should listen to, you're still going to play the same number of home and road games, and it just kind of determines whether you start fast or, like, finish fast. Because I think this schedule is kind of similar to the 2015 schedule, where they had a lot of games at home at the end of the season.
What I'm saying is you play 4 out of your last 5 at home.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be the type of schedule where we go into, assuming that the team is not just bad, assuming that they're a pretty good team, you go into something like week 11, we might the Seahawks could be like a 500 team and have such a favorable schedule waiting for them
right.
that people might be a little bit underestimating them at that point.
Right.
I mean, it's a weird schedule, all things considered.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Because of that. And then also with the travel to London, but then traveling to London, then coming back with the bye week and then playing another road game at Lions. I mean, that's the one that to me where it's like, wow, you tack on end of October. We're only going to see this team at home two times in the first 2 months of the season.
That's why you have to go to London like me.
Yes.
I'm not ruling it out.
You'll see them more. But they have maximized us being as cold as possible.
No, I hadn't thought about that. That's good.
Well, you
and
be
as
there.
Many as many raining games as possible
in the month of December.
Russell Wilson struggles.
Five games in the month of December, and four of them are at home. We are going to play. We are yes. going to go home for the Seahawks four times in December.
All right. Well,
but I mean, like Festivus night hosting the Chiefs. That's going to be fun.
That is going to be fun,
right? I mean, provided the Seahawks are.
They're going to be playing at the brand new Tottenham Hotspur. Stadium.
When do you go to? We should talk about this later. We should talk about exact timing later. But I'm going to be out of town on October 7th for the week 5 home game. So I'll have seen the team in person one time as a season ticket holder before November.
Where are you going
to
be?
I'm going to a wedding in Minnesota.
An October wedding in Minnesota.
I hear it's going to be lovely.
It's going to be beautiful.
All right, so this week with the NFL draft coming up, we've seen some availability with Pete Carroll and John Schneider and some notable takeaways from that. Pete Carroll said that the Seahawks are still open to signing Colin Kaepernick, saying, quote, he's a fine football player and there may be a place for him. We don't know that yet.
It's just a deeply strange
situation.
It's like they can't rip the Band-Aid off. They just keep like... They're like picking at it, maybe it'll come off. Gentle.
Has Colin Kaepernick said anything about anything to anyone? Like,
not really about football, and that's the thing that I think is kind of ridiculous. Is that like people treat it like people talk about like hiring Colin Kaepernick? People are not in football when they want to like make points about. They're like, oh, nobody's hired him. Colin Kaepernick still has agency. He doesn't just like if you get an offer, decide you're playing for the team.
It's a tremendous pet peeve of mine because there's all sorts of rules regarding rosters. It's not like if you want to go out and hire 10 quarterbacks, you can't just do that.
The Browns should draft 2 quarterbacks, but
so he's could be out here saying nothing, and everybody else. Looks bad no matter what. Unless he agrees to sign with the team.
I mean, there's been an offer, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can pretty conclusively, we don't know who leaked this, but I mean, if there was a version of this that was more favorable to the Seahawks, like they had been turned down by Colin Kaepernick, they would get that information out there. I'm very confident of that.
Yeah, I'm not even.
The expert leakers.
I mean, everyone in pro sports is.
This quote to me, though, made me think that, first off, it was weird. But second off, it made me think that maybe the canceling of the trip that was scheduled for Colin Kaepernick.
Postponing.
Postponed.
It's like if you postpone your wedding instead of canceling it.
They've got things to do. Like, they have to review Taco Time. It made me think that this probably was not necessarily coming from Pete Carroll, though.
It's such a weird quote to me that I have to take it at face value because, like, who would make up a quote like this?
It's a strange situation.
John Schneider also told reporters last week that Earl Thomas's representatives have told him that Earl Thomas will not hold out if he does not receive an extension before the start of training camp and is still on the Seahawks roster. Said that a decision on Malik McDowell after the previous report that the Seahawks would release him is still ongoing.
He's being released.
I mean, yes. Jane Slater of the NFL Network suggested earlier in this week that the Cowboys might prefer to wait for Thomas to become a free agent rather than trying to trade for him at the draft. You'll recall that the Seahawks would like to get a first and third round pick for Thomas if they trade him. And obviously that we'll probably know by draft night if that doesn't happen.
A hefty price to pay, though.
Wait, so last year it was they might trade Sherman, right?
Yeah, that was the talk leading into the draft.
And it didn't happen. So what are we... Do we really think they're going to get rid of Earl before...
My hunch is now no. In the last week, the Earl Thomas being traded, I would have told you that there is maybe not better than a 50% chance a week ago, but closer to that. And now I feel like we're down to like a 10% chance that Earl's traded.
I think that's pretty reasonable.
The thing that makes me nervous, though, and this is a quote that was somewhere, was that there was talk about the Seahawks being almost so desperate to trade out of this 18th pick, which we talked about. Everybody expects it. If everybody in the Seahawks fan base expects it, all the other NFL teams expect it also.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter, because first off, there's possibly several teams that are trying to get up.
If there isn't a quarterback available at 18, let's say that all five of the quarterbacks who are considered first-round quarterbacks are all drafted by 18, I would be nervous that the Seahawks...
There's a 50% chance they're going to go in the first five.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
It feels like there's a good chance that all those quarterbacks will be gone. I'm nervous that the Seahawks, in their interest in trading down, will not necessarily trade for value.
I mean, that's just not possible, because teams overvalue early picks so much. It is almost literally impossible to make a trade down that is not a good trade.
Okay.
Like, unless you just like straight up traded the 18th pick for the 27th pick and didn't get anything else in return.
Would have put it past them.
I'm not going to spend one single second between now and the NFL draft worrying that the Seahawks are not going to get enough value by trading down.
So
last on
what
my
are
list
your
of
percentage chances that we actually make a pick in the first round?
Do we make a pick in the first round?
Yes.
I'd put that at like 55%. I think it's
really 55%.
I think it's more likely that they trade down from like 18 to 29, something like that.
I think they're trading again from there if they do that. I think you're right. I feel like there's like a 25% chance they make a pick on the first day of the draft.
All right, well, I guess we'll find out.
I mean, they are desperate for draft capital. If only they're desperate for draft capital in August.
They're eager for draft capital. I don't know if they're desperate for draft capital.
And that's not the report.
You don't
that I
have seen. To trade down to the second round to get additional draft picks. Like, you can do it by trading down within the first round. This, when you start at 18, they historically have been starting out at like 24 or 25.
Yes.
This is a big difference.
But this is the asset that the Seahawks have, is right here.
Yeah.
This is what they have to use. So they're going to have to try to get the most.
I mean, I don't
out
think they have to
possible.
Get the second, a second and a third out of this.
We'll see.
We'll see.
But it feels,
we'll see.
It feels almost certain that they make a trade with this pick.
It would be very surprising if they
did. It'd be kind of shocking if the Seahawks just like submitted a pick and drafted a player. Like,
it'd be, one of them was great.
It's really strange.
That we, I mean, like, we want this guy actually was there, available.
But particularly this year, just because of the fact that they're missing those draft picks.
Well, did you see the thing John Snyder said? Their board is smaller or has less people now.
Yeah, I don't think that matters until you get to like the fifth round. I also don't think I agree with that strategy, but that's probably a discussion for another day. So
maybe with Zach Whitman when we recap the draft sometime next week.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that, and hopefully we've got lots of trades down to discuss. On that note, thanks for listening.
Thanks.